Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pro Wrestling Pondering. So this is the interview show where we get a guest on and we discuss issues of independent wrestling. Sometimes we're focusing on specific companies, specific shows. It can really run the gambit. Here tonight, we are going to be discussing AAW Shimmer in a new brand new project called The School of Everything Else with Kevin Harvey. Kevin Harvey has been a tremendous contributor to the Midwest independent scene for over 14 years and has worked with so many great companies and also worked with companies like Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate USA. So it's going to be a great conversation. I'm looking forward to having everyone hear it. Before we get to the interview, though, let's get to some plugs. Twitter.com/PWPonderings is the place to find results coming up this very Thursday night. Yes, Thursday night, Ring of Honor's Night of Hoopla. I will be there live and tweeting results and hopefully getting some pictures up. Pending a quality signal in LaSalle, Illinois, this Saturday night, we will have Dreamwave results, and I believe we are working on Ring of Honor results for Milwaukee and Dearborn, Michigan as well. So twitter.com/PWPonderings is certainly the place to find all those things, all the results, all the news. If you're listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave a nice 4 or 5 star review. And when you do that, that helps people find out about Pro Wrestling Ponderings. So we very much appreciate that. Also, we have a link to HighSpots.com. When you click on that link and when you make a purchase from HighSpots, not only are you supporting quality professional wrestling companies like PWG, PWX, Femme Fatales, but you are also supporting Pro Wrestling Ponderings. If you scroll down all the way to the bottom right-hand corner, we also have an Amazon link. Everybody goes to Amazon for something. Books, DVDs, everything except for groceries. I think that's the only thing they don't sell. But when you go and if continue to support Pro Wrestling Ponderings by going to Amazon.com through our link. And again, you're going to be helping to support this website. Keep up what we are doing here. The only way that we can continue to produce quality podcasts, to get the level of interviews that we get and produce the columns that we do is through your support, both financially and through the reviews you leave on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Well, it's been about 3 minutes. I have talked enough. So without any further ado, let's get to the interview with Kevin Harvey. Joining me on the line right now is a man who is starting a brand new venture in independent professional wrestling. He has also been associated with companies such as Dragon Gate USA, Ring of Honor, and perhaps most closely associated with AEW, for better or for worse. Welcome to the show, Kevin Harvey. Kevin Harvey, how's it going?
Oh, it is going quite well, and I think of late you could definitely argue for worse with AAW. Been rather unfortunate thorn in their side for, I don't know, about a year now.
So we're going to get to AAW a little bit later, but I want to talk about this brand new venture that you have sort of gone under. And my colleague Kevin Ford texted me earlier and asked what this was, and I explained it, and he called it brilliant. So if Kevin Ford thinks it's brilliant, that's got to mean something, right?
I can die tomorrow, and my entire bucket list has been scratched off.
So it is called The School for Everything Else, and I think the most basic question that, like Kevin, wants to know is, what is The School for Everything Else?
Well, essentially, the motivation for The School of Everything Else, it stems from something that you can certainly attest to. You watch far, far, far more independent wrestling than I do, but you can watch almost any given show, even the best of independents, and if they happen to have, whether it's an in-ring promo, a video, you know, pre-tape promo, a segment, there's at least a couple of things per show where you kind of go, nah, that's unfortunate. And it's something that you can watch independent wrestling and really identify it as a huge gap is something that's not trained. And, you know, in terms of what is everything else, the things that I'm really looking to teach people here is the art of the interview, the art of the promo, because those are actually two different things, really, that a lot of people don't necessarily realize. Working with an interviewer, working on your own, working with multiple people in a multi-person promo or a segment or skit of some kind. And really all skills practice of putting it all together, body language, body movements, how to hold a microphone, not hold a microphone, and sort of the psychology behind what you can do with your body while you're talking and quite literally doing everything else but the wrist lock, headlock, body slam, armbar, moonsaults of professional wrestling.
And who is the school for everything else? Who would you say this is geared towards?
I would say it's really geared toward anybody that has at least completed their wrestling training, if they're a wrestler, and has at least started to go on the road a little bit, whether that's wrestling for maybe one promotion or a home promotion associated with their school, or maybe they've been on the road a while. I think there's something that a lot of folks can get out of this, because when you look at promos and interviews and character development, different shticks, word choice, facials, things of that nature, that's something that the only way that you can really reliably learn that right now is to go on the road and, quite frankly, to do trial and error. A lot of times you kind of learn promos by trying something in maybe in front of a live crowd and realizing, oh, that didn't work. I got no reaction. Or maybe if there happens to be a name or legend on that show, they might pull you aside and say, hey, kid, you know, that promo was not great, or here's what you could have done better. And what I'm trying to do is get a little more centralized location, someplace where people can work on just that. I mean, when you look at any professional sport, if you take professional basketball, it's not like Michael Jordan just became Michael Jordan, you know, one day and decided he was going to play basketball. He had so many skills, and that's because he practiced every facet of basketball, from dribbling to free throws, passing, working with a team, his own shots, his own skills. And in pro wrestling, even though about any wrestling school will say, we'll give you all the tools you need to make it to WWE, you know, the art of the promo and talking and the everything else is something that typically gets missed or cast aside because there's a ring and people want to work in the ring and work on the wrestling aspect.
So we'll get into the logistics of this in a minute or two, but I guess I want to know sort of what inspires you personally to get involved with a project like this and to sort of come up with these concepts and how you want to do these individual sessions.
So the inspiration really comes from me wanting to give something back to pro wrestling. I mean, as much as it would be easy to say, oh, I'm better because I've been running around for 14 years and I'm not with WWE or I'm not with Impact Wrestling. Some of the best memories and experiences I've had in my life, in fact, probably the majority of them, are due to pro wrestling in one way, shape, or form, whether it's an amazing show that I've had the honor to perform on, or if that's being on the road with my friends or childhood heroes at different points. Yeah, that's something where I really feel like this is probably where I can give back the most. Because something that a lot of people probably haven't seen is, for a lot of time now, with AEW and with Shimmer, I've been doing a lot of things behind the scenes, trying to help keep, you know, promos together or coming up with ideas or whatever I can do to contribute. And I think that's where I've kind of found my niche and where I can probably contribute best in non-wrestling capacities.
And what would you say are sort of your short-term and long-term goals for this project?
Well, right now the short-term goal is to just get the concept of the School of Everything Else off of the ground. Right now the official go-live date on that is August 5th, and that's the short-term. I just need to get a couple of folks to sign up to make this worth everybody's while, because there's drills that are going to be done. There's public speaking class elements to it. There's improv class elements to it. And if it's just me or just one other person, it's not necessarily going to work as well as it can as it would if you were going to be in front of, say, a peer group and several people that can give you honest, positive or negative criticism, because you're going to learn from what you do well, but you've also kind of got to learn from what you might not be doing so well. So short term, get it off the ground. And then long term, really just to make it a consistent thing where there's waves of students, and also maybe even a shorter long-term goal of, I announced yesterday that, you know, the concept of the School of Everything Else is able to go on the road or in the air to do camps remotely. So I can certainly work things out with promoters as hopefully if this gets some success, people speak well of it. You know, if somebody is in California, Boston, Florida, wherever it may be, if they want to have me come in and, you know, do a one-off camp, those are going to be options that are on the table.
So how did you sort of tinker with this, and what have you done to sort of prepare for the School of Everything Else?
Well, the preparation really started back, I want to say it was like summer of 2010. I kind of pitched the idea to Truth Martini about, hey, what if I came by and did maybe like a talking class or a promo class or something like that? And that was really the only idea was, okay, what if I come up and help, you know, new students at the House of Truth to talk? It was just dumb luck. I was going to be in Michigan at my parents' house for a few days that year. And I decided, you know, it's only another 2 hours or so to Detroit. So I worked it out. And, you know, Truth gave me the opportunity to speak with his students and to work with them on some things. And, you know, people seem to think really, really highly of it that we're there. But in the logistics of living in Chicago and going to Detroit once a month or once every couple of months are not the most realistic or timely things. And then the idea sort of was tabled because I thought, you know, this is something I could do on a somewhat regular basis, but do I do a facility? I thought, do I try to open, you know, a full-on pro wrestling school, and do I commission, you know, a local wrestler to take a partner, you know, as a wrestling trainer? But there, it just got into way too much cost and probably way more time than I realistically, you know, would have given my life outside of wrestling schedule, my wrestling schedule, and trying to put this into the mix as well. And I've done a couple other just like one-off camps, or I get whether it's with people on shows or just pulling people aside, maybe after they've done a promo or little character things that I see that maybe could be kind of turned up in a match. The final pilot, after I kind of got my head around how I thought I was going to do this as, you know, a multi-part camp, if you will, was this past May. I had the opportunity to go down for the last Shine event at the Orpheum in Ybor City. And I got to work with some of the girls on promos that should end up on that DVD. I know they didn't air them on the iPay-per-view, but they should end up on the DVD when that eventually comes out. Or maybe they put them on YouTube. I honestly haven't seen any of those come out yet. But I also, later that weekend, I had offered Lexi Fife, who runs the Slam and Ladies Training School down in Florida. I talked to her back during the Spring Shimmer taping. Hey, what would you think if I came down and did this? Would you be interested? She said she definitely would. So I went down and did a camp for a couple of her girls, and I really picked Lexi's brain about, what did you think about this? Did you think it works? And Lexi seemed really, really happy with it. Had a lot of positive things to say, stuff that, you know, she really liked about it. And I thought if I can get, you know, positive feedback and a seal of approval from Lexi Fife on, you know, training, I thought that I really take that as a badge of honor to have Lexi say, hey, you did a good job teaching people this.
So I guess if I'm a wrestler and I'm sort of looking at your camp and I'm sort of interested in it, I guess the biggest question that I have is what makes Kevin Harvey the man to be sort of behind this camp, and what credibility do you sort of bring to the table?
Well, I think for credibility, I've been around for a long, long time. I'm not going to tell anybody, hey, I'm the best guy. Like my selling pitch, if you will, is my commitment is not to say I'm the best. I'm not going to say I'm going to make you the best. My commitment is to do anything I can in the interest of making attendees of the School of Everything Else better at what they're doing. Giving them an opportunity to cut those promos. Because when you look at anything I've done in wrestling, the most success that I have found, or the niches I have found, has been basically running my mouth, whether that be, you know, ring announcing, whether that be backstage interviewing, whether that be the promos as of late for the last year with AAW, where people certainly saw a completely different side of anything I've ever really done on camera. It's bringing a lot of experience, and bringing along with the, I don't even know how many years I did sort of the interviewer shtick with AAW, but a lot of that would be, I would work with Mike and Danny on, okay, what do we need out of this promo, and trying to really be the glue to hold it together. Cause typically if somebody's working with an interviewer, it's not, might be because they aren't the strongest talker on their own, and maybe they might forget a point or two and really needing somebody to ask that follow-up question or get them back to center on what that, the meat of that promo is all about. And it's something where I don't have a whole lot of distractions with wrestling. You know, I don't go out on the road a lot by choice. I happen to be spoiled rotten in that two absolutely top shelf wrestling promotions run about 15 to 30 minutes from where I live, in AAW and Shimmer. And when I can drive, you know, a half hour and do this, I don't necessarily have a motivation or a want or a need to take random trips, you know, on the road. Could I go to the East Coast and maybe get some work? Sure, but I think I would rather do the things I feel like I can do well and do them close to home for the right money and with people that I really hold in high regard.
So how do you sort of see the logistics of these actual camps sort of week by week? I mean, sort of how is it going to go? Is it going to be, you know, a month-long camp, 2 months? Why don't you sort of run down what you're thinking about as far as how the camp is actually going to be run?
Sure. The camps that start on August 5th, they're going to be held at the Berwyn Eagles Club, you know, home of AAW and Shimmer and a couple other wrestling promotions here and there. But let's just keep the focus on AAW and Shimmer with that. And what it's going to be is a five-week camp, and it's going to be starting August 5th every Monday for five consecutive weeks. It's going to be 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. And really the focus is, I sort of have a predetermined focus of what I want those five different sessions to be. Essentially, there'll be a, you know, getting started and getting to know the class. And in that, I'll combine working with an interviewer, sort of step one with interviews and promos. Step two will be the individual pre-tape. Step three will be the art of the in-ring promo and how that differs and how you can sort of puppet the live crowd as opposed to speaking to a camera. A fourth session of multi-person interviews, whether that be tag teams or skits and segments. And then a fifth session, which is really putting it all together in an all-skills practice, because I've got different drills and ideas to really teach all those different elements. But the thing I'll throw out there is I'm not completely married to that being an absolute format. Because if I get a room of, you know, 5 to 10 people, whatever it may be, I'm going to ask them what they hope to get out of it. And if there's specific things that most of the people or everybody in that room really wants to get out of it, I'm not opposed to changing the curriculum. And I have enough contacts within the wrestling world locally and beyond that I can pick an almost unlimited amount of brains of if people want ideas or, hey, how can we maybe do this better? It's not just my brain that I'm bringing to the table. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, if you come to this class, a random person's going to show up. But I'm going to use my resources to try to make everybody around me better.
And I guess sort of one final question about the school, and then we'll sort of get into some AAW stuff. I mean, what do you see sort of at the end of this first session, what are you going to sort of determine? How are you going to decide what was successful and what wasn't?
I think I'm going to turn to the feedback of the people that took the session, because if you don't listen to your customer base in any business, you're not going to be successful. So if they tell me, hey, this is maybe what I didn't feel I got the most out of, or this was great, you know, if there's a little spark that I see in somebody, maybe I need to throw some gas on that and get the fire burning a little hotter on whatever facet that might be. I want it to evolve with time, because that's something, as you're doing characters have to evolve. You can't just always do the same thing in the same town in front of the same people, or the crowd will get burnt out. You as a performer will get burnt out. You aren't really going to progress to anything past that point.
And I guess one more question. What is your biggest concern going into this project?
I think my biggest concern, quite frankly, is, you know, I don't have the luxury of being a current or former WWE, WWF, TNA star of some kind. You know, if I was Jake Roberts offering, you know, these classes at these prices, I'd probably have 4,800 people signing up from all different parts of, you know, the United States. So I realize that's a question that is in a lot of people's minds. You know, why would I give a relatively low amount of money to Kevin Harvey to teach me these things he says he can teach me? And that's why I've solicited a lot of the different testimonials that that I put up. You know, Allison Danger has on the Facebook group, as well as on another podcast recently, spoke how much she just loves the idea of the concept of the school and everything else, and endorsed me as a person that, after working with her backstage at Shimmer, that she feels is the right person to do this. I've solicited feedback from a couple people who have done the camps. I've got other folks that I'm hoping to hear from in the next week or two with their endorsements. And I'm not saying, hey, if I write this, can I put your name on it? Like, all I've asked them is, hey, this is what I'm doing. If you have anything that you want to say about working with me that you think would make someone interested in doing this, that's fine. If people don't agree with that, I'm not going to twist their arm. But so far, I haven't had to twist anybody's arm too hard to say the nice things that they've been saying.
Always a pleasant thing to have. To be liked in wrestling is always a good thing, I would say.
Yes, it is.
So let's talk about sort of your AEW career. You've been around for quite some time, but I guess what got you started in AEW?
Well, the start in AEW was truly just basically a departure from IWA Mid-South. There was some silly stuff that happened on a show that I just pretty well just got sick of. I did some dumb things, some other people did some dumb things, and it was just not the place for me to hang out anymore. So I made a phone call to Danny Daniels, and you know, who I'd known for quite some time at that point. And there wasn't really a spot, and Danny was nice enough to give me an opportunity to just kind of come to the show, and there really wasn't a plan. It was a, hey, if you come to the shows, maybe we'll figure out, you know, something for you to do. And it took a while to find something where it's like, okay, what's a good way that I can contribute? Because at that point, they had, I want to say it was 4 or 5 managers on the show. You certainly didn't need another manager, nor do I really think I was ready or would I have been good for that audience at that time in that role. And really early on settled into the backstage interviewer role because I could run my mouth. I didn't necessarily have a character or a shtick, but I could help other people get their promos in and maybe get some people some time to talk and fill in the blanks for things that they may have missed along the way.
Because I remember when I was starting to watch AEW about 4 years ago, it felt like you did everything. You were doing ring announcing, backstage, commentating. You were a man of all trades.
Yeah, and it was something where I was always happy to help out in any capacity that I could for them, because anybody that's affiliated with the running of AEW, they are people I consider friends in the business and friends outside of wrestling. And you know, having years of experience as a ring announcer, if you know, Jimmy wasn't able to do a show, I mean, I'm already there. In most cases, I already had a suit in the car. Why not, you know, have me ring announce? It's not like it's that big of a stretch for me to do that. Plus, hell, if there's an in-ring interview, I'm already out there. It's that easy. And with commentary, it's just something, if they needed me to do it, I had no trouble at all doing it.
And sort of your role sort of got beefed up a little bit as you became the sort of the on-air authority figure. And, you know, I think that it's sort of a role that's been done to death in pro wrestling among the independents, among the national companies. How did you sort of approach that role and maybe try to put a little bit of a different twist on it, maybe try to do something that wasn't the same old cliched heel authority figure?
Well, I think the idea stemmed from Danny and I were talking, and for a long time I was kind of burned out on doing interviews. It wasn't necessarily like a challenge I really wanted to sink my teeth into that much. Plus, and you certainly know the evolution of the AEW product over the last several years, you know, the people that were coming in weren't, you know, new to promos. They didn't necessarily need an interview guy in a lot of cases. So when Jim had been out for a little while, I just fired the question to Danny one night. I think I said, hey, is Jim going to be back for a while? And turns out, you know, he was going to be removed from the business for a little bit. I said, what if we did a gimmick where Jim named me the, you know, the whatever boss, COO is what we ended up landing on. And then, like, 1 week later, that's what Triple H comes out to, or what they're calling him on Raw. So it's like, oh, great. Now everyone's going to think I'm copying that. I'm like, I did it 6 days before, darn it. Anyhow, my take on it was, one part, I wanted to keep the positive energy that Jim brought, because, you know, Jim is very well known for speaking to the fans, caring about what the fans have to say, and sort of whatever you want to call it, the Jim rah-rah speech before shows. So I didn't want to lose that, because I feel like that's something that the AEW fans appreciate, the open honesty and the accessibility of people who are office, or who they maybe perceive as office. So I just jumped into that, and yeah, it's no secret that I care about AEW. I have no financial investment in its success as a company, but I want it to continue to grow. I want it to continue to succeed. So I figured I would get out of that what I put into that. So I set up email addresses where fans could reach me. I set up the YouTube channel, and as you know, the office man was doing promos and things trying to hype up shows, because I thought, if I represent that company and it doesn't look like I care, how can I expect to make everyone else care? Because the purpose of any, you know, authoritative or authority figure is to advance the plot in some capacity. There's going to need to be a stipulation or a decision or whatever it needs to be. I feel like that always reverts, you know, from the McMahon-Austin feud, that always reverts to, oh, everyone wants to see the boss get beat up. And it, you know, it got to that point with Boz. But we all saw that that was part of a bigger story arc that was to unfold, you know, probably several months after that fact.
So being in the authority figure and sort of just being around AEW, you know, for so many years, what are your thoughts on sort of how the product has evolved and changed ever since you started from day one to today?
Well, from day one, you know, the level of talent that's in AEW is just at such a higher level, whether that's people who were maybe newer to wrestling in 2006, who've been in AEW since 2006, they've had an opportunity to learn and perfect their craft. You've had the influx of talent from other areas, whether that be, you know, Michael Elgin certainly became a success story for AEW coming in from the Toronto markets. Whether you've got the Monster Mafia and sort of all these others who are coming in and making AEW a place where they hang their hat, it really just became about ever evolving talent. And the way things have been booked, you know, we try to keep the finger on the pulse of, you know, making sure things don't get stale, trying to keep things new, trying to keep things interesting. And I think Danny is, you know, the wrestling mind and the booker behind things, has done a great job of trying to figure out what are the right combinations of people in matches, in teams, in stables, and really just making sure that things continue to evolve. Because if AAW kept doing what it was doing in, you know, 2005, 2006, the crowds would not, the average crowd size in the Eagles Club would not have grown. Bourbon Street probably wouldn't be happening, and some of these other toe-in-the-water satellite shows that we're starting to see pop up probably wouldn't be happening either.
Is there anyone who has really stood out over the years that you can say with confidence that, you know, AEW really built this guy, and, you know, he is sort of, you know, I think most people would say the two names probably come to mind are Tyler Black and Silas Young, but sort of maybe you could talk about their development and sort of what AEW did for them and what they did for AEW.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at, you know, somebody like Tyler Black and Silas Young, talk about the workhorses of AEW, somebody that you could put into any situation and they would somehow, some way make the most of it. To see what Silas did in the AEW ring, now obviously he's with Ring of Honor now, and that train is just starting to, in, at least from what I've seen, it's just starting to sort of settle out on the tracks. Silas was just absolutely tearing it up in AAW and connecting with that crowd. And to see him finally sort of getting a more consistent exposure on a little bit grander scale, that's just tremendous, because that is a guy who cares so much about making the most out of the story that needs to be told. And I'd say I was honored to do the little spots that I did, whether it was, we had some little riffs when I was just the interviewer, and then he was an in-ring interview with him is what tipped the hat that, oh, I'm going to be the authority figure. So just to be able to be in there and kind of work with him and see how he manipulates that crowd and pulls their strings, what a pleasure that is. And for Tyler, you know, same thing. You know, two people who are definitely the standard bearers for AAW, and they never took a night where they were going to phone it in. You know, there are some matches that Silas or Tyler had that will probably be given greater star rankings or whatever we want to say than others, but they never went into anything thinking this is going to be maybe a less scientific classic. They really molded their styles to whoever they were working with to tell the best story they could.
So as you transition from being an authority figure, you know, from being a ring announcer slash everything guy to authority figure then to manager, why did you feel that sort of now in the last few months was the time for you to sort of step into that role?
Well, it's something that being a manager in AEW is something I've generally speaking always wanted to do. Looking back at 2006, wasn't the right time. I probably wasn't ready or nearly as ready as I thought I was in my mind at that point. And even taking the COO gimmick, it wasn't like it was unknown. Jim would be back at some point. So in my mind, I thought, how easy is it for me to turn this into something else down the road with no specifics in mind? But if I am the boss, there will come a point when, okay, the real boss is back. And there's that question, what happens to this guy who's been, you know, who's been steering the ship while the boss is away? And there was just enough things along the way to make people question, were the things I was doing on the up and up? And as it turns out, well, what do you know? They weren't. But it's not like we played that the entire time. It wasn't super transparent. Tried to make the story a little more compelling than this man wears a suit jacket, therefore he's bad.
And how did you come up with sort of who you are as a person with the suit and the facial hair, which we actually have a question from someone about sort of how that has evolved as well. But, you know, how did you come up with this character, this version of yourself that, you know, is such so evil and, you know, cuts these promos that are pretty dark?
Yep. I think the character really comes from it comes from a part of me that is just very much the volume turned up. Now, I'm not the kind of person who sits around, you know, stabbing teddy bears in the heart or telling stories about killing frogs or whatever other BS I've done in promos. It's not like I'm sitting around doing that, but I genuinely like manipulating people or situation. I guess you could say kind of screwing with them just to see how they react. Not to be mean or not to be a jerk or anything, but it's just funny to kind of see how people react to a really off color joke or just different things that you can do. I mean, heck, 2 days ago, I went to the gym and I'm still sporting this ridiculous, like, Iron Sheik strongman mustache right now. And so the other day I basically dressed up as the weightlifter guys from Family Guy and went to the gym just to amuse myself, to watch people point without pointing and, like, talk without talking. And I was even going so far as to make all the stupid sounds like, bleh, and I was there by myself. Like, I just did it to amuse myself while I got my workout in that day. So to be able to kind of do this character and go to dark places, you know, one of the catchphrases I've been trying to keep in mind with this character is, you know, get uncomfortable. Everybody experiences something different when they get out of their comfort zone. And a lot of times the things I say to fans at ringside in response to the ever clever, you know, you're fat, you're bald, you're gay, or whatever glorious insults may come from the mouth of a slightly intoxicated wrestling fan, I say some pretty cold-blooded things in response to those people. Always got to kind of look where the camera is to make sure it doesn't quite make the DVD, to make that live event experience a little bit different. But it's just something that I have a lot of fun with. It is fun for me to try to push people's buttons, to creep them out, or to really make them wonder, like, oh, God, what's this guy doing?
What is wrong with Kevin Harvey? That should be the next question, is what is wrong with Kevin Harvey?
Yeah, and for years, Derek St. Holmes behind the scenes has always referred to me as inappropriately inappropriate, and he's done that a couple times on DVD commentary. So I kind of look at it as, all right, we're just taking one of my finer points and really turning up that volume.
So Jennifer from our website wanted to know if you had tied up any women to train tracks, given the state of your mustache.
Oh man, if I had, I certainly wouldn't want to admit that on a public record.
So you're not saying you didn't do it, but you're also not saying you did do it.
I can neither confirm or deny my actions on the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Metro line at the Aurora Route 59 stop.
And we also had another question sort of about production values, because, you know, I think everybody knows that AEW is sort of affiliated with Smartmark Video, and Smartmark Video is sort of expanding their business model with the streaming and the MP4s, and the last Chikara show ever was put on Blu-ray. So what are your thoughts on sort of the production of both AEW and independent wrestling overall?
Well, I think for AEW, that's easily a thing that makes it stand out. You know, I'm not here to necessarily toot our own horns, but you hear AEW thrown around with a lot of what people would consider the top shelf independents. And even when compared to some of those, people are saying, but AEW has the backstage promos, the vignettes, the interviews and things. And I love it because it gives more character depth. You can only tell so much of a story in the wrestling ring. I'm a firm believer that you need to have interviews. You need to have stories behind why the thing in the ring is happening. And so for AEW, that's even the video wall in the live event, that adds such a huge element. You know, it helps break up the show. It helps make sure that the pace doesn't slow down. If maybe you need to do some quick ring maintenance, you can have, you know, a 60 or couple minute promo or whatever, 60 second or a couple minute promo on the video wall, so the audience still has something to do and the show keeps moving to tell the different story arcs of all the different stories that it's trying to tell. And, you know, we bring up Smartmark Video. What a great thing for independent wrestling in general. There, with that business expanding, I was personally incredibly excited with the MP4 download started. I think it was either late last year or earlier this year, but when that hit, I'm a big supporter of instant gratification for wrestling fans, as opposed to making an order and having to wait for something to ship or waiting to save up enough money to go to a show and get a ticket and concession food and buy merchandise while you're there. You can, you know, spend somewhere between 10 and 20 bucks and hit download now and start watching it pretty much instantly.
For sure. And what do you see as the future of production in independent wrestling? Obviously there are concerns about piracy and, you know, the splintered audience, and now we have so many more options now, not just with wrestling, but with all forms of entertainment and media. And, you know, what do you think independent wrestling needs to do in order to stay relevant and to stay sort of ahead of the game?
I think independent wrestling, it needs to stay current with technology. Technology is always changing, and that, you know, when we bring up piracy, you can make a new coding on a DVD. Someone will figure out how to rip that coding tomorrow. But you've got to work with the technology, and you've got to be able to evolve your product, both what you are producing and sort of how you are getting your brand out there. You've got to keep it fresh, and not just the content that you're doing, but the media through which you are putting it out.
So, in addition to your work in AEW, you also have done a lot of work with Shimmer, as you mentioned before, and sort of how did you get affiliated with them, and what do you see as your role with that company?
Well, with Shimmer, that really just started out of years of friendship with Dave Prazak. Dave and I have known each other since it was probably one of my first 5 to 10 shows where I first met Dave, and we were able to just be good friends ever since. And we've always run a lot of the same or similar places, whether it was, you know, Dave was who got me into IWA Mid-South. We've been around AEW forever and a whole lot of, you know, I guess I'll say nameless independents in between. But it really just started as kind of showing up to be general help if anything was needed. With as many fly-ins as there are for Shimmer, if somebody needed a ride, I'd give them a ride from the airport or the hotel or whatever needed to happen. And it's just something where he and I talk about Shimmer and ideas all the time. And yeah, I always sort of tongue in cheek call myself the proud Shimmer lackey is my official role, but I'll put on any hat that I need to. For a while I was the shimbulance when the girls would get hurt and need to go to get some emergency medical treatment. We'll do that run. But, anymore I've really taken more to helping out with some of the creative end, have a small hand in that pool in terms of what's happening on the shows, and also trying to help Dave out more and more with production stuff. He and I talked at length yesterday about how can there be more production, maybe more interviews, and sort of how can we continue to evolve that facet of a Shimmer event.
So I want to ask about Soraya Knight, because unfortunately you have been the victim of many an assault by her. Describe, as someone who has been there firsthand, what is it like to just be in and around one of her entrances?
Oh, it is an interesting environment. And I don't know how much the fans realize legitimately there for their protection. Because if you've ever noticed, she's never pulled a punch. She's never pulled a slap. She's like, she goes full out, and I just try to be there to pull her back. And I've certainly paid the price many times. But in a world where everything is thought or known to have a predetermined result, that is one scenario where nobody in that building knows what is going to happen, including her, because she is going to do whatever she wants, whenever she wants, unless somebody is there to distract her in some way.
So I want to ask about your experience with WrestleCon. I mean, it was sort of the second time the Shimmer has ever done a show outside of Berwyn, the first time being in Florida back in 2007. But, you know, WrestleCon was a big deal for Shimmer, probably one of their, I believe it was their biggest attendance ever for a show, being on iPay-Per-View, the Steel Cage, and I remember reading the tweets from you and Dave as you were driving overnight to New Jersey, and what was that experience like, just doing that long drive from Chicago to Secaucus, and then helping to put on what most people agree was a pretty big show for Shimmer at the time?
Yeah, the Shimmer 53 was a landmark thing for Shimmer, easily the largest live event attendance, and from what I understand, did pretty solid iPay-Per-View numbers as well. And the drive there, Dave and I make pretty good traveling companions, because we basically just start talking about the most ridiculous things, and we do not shut up for however long that road may be, because it's just kind of how we keep each other awake, and we're pretty much laughing the entire time. It just gets ridiculous, and the stuff that was, you know, whatever was tweeting, like road trip 53 hashtag or whatever it was. Like it was just a whole lot of ridiculous. And whether it's changing song lyrics along the way, or just he and I both have a knack for seeing the most ridiculous things on the side of the road and making it into a wrestling reference or something like it. It's always a fun experience to be in a car for a while with Dave. We always have a good time and we keep eyes out for each other. You know, he drove the entire way to New Jersey, and I drove most of the way back, because I could see he was fading a little bit, so kind of forced pull over, tag, let's switch this out. So just keeping each other on our toes, so that was a good thing. But the event itself, man, just to see that many people there for an all-women's pro wrestling event was something special. I think it just speaks to what everybody that is part of Shimmer as a wrestling product, as a brand, or whatever label we want to put on that, that just speaks to the hard work that everybody has done. That was not a modeling display. That was the best women's wrestling that you are going to see in the world in front of the largest audience live that it has ever had.
Yes, there were people from my website who were not completely sold on going to a women's wrestling show, but they came out of it and they were very, very impressed. And I know that, you know, a lot of people said that Shimmer probably made one of the better impressions of any of the companies at WrestleCon. So,
yeah, and when you look at the in-ring product, everybody worked really, really hard. And the girls, you know, that everybody's got a character of some kind. They've got something to endear them to that audience of presumably a whole lot of people that have never seen them before, other than, you know, a pocket of that I'm sure was regular DVD buying audience. But how many people went there just out of a curiosity because there were, you know, 50,000 extra people in town for, or 100,000, whatever it is, for WrestleMania, just checking out a women's show on a whim. it was just fantastic to see that. And Dave puts incredible attention to detail and everything that goes into a Shimmer event, and just to see the stress that he goes through, but out of his passion to make that the best that it can possibly be, kudos to him and everyone he surrounds himself with for really working their butts off to make sure that it is not just a sideshow.
So you've done so much with Shimmer and with AEW, but what other experiences have in professional wrestling have really stuck with you, and where are some of the places that you've learned sort of this craft and have really sort of honed your character and who you are as a professional in wrestling?
Yeah, I think in the early years, the place where I worked most often, a lot of people probably never heard of it because it didn't have a tremendous internet presence. It was called the Hardcore Wrestling Federation. As compelling of a name as that is not, the HWF ran some really top-notch shows all throughout Ontario from about 99, 2000, 2001, somewhere in there. And I had the opportunity to go on the road with them. A lot of times we would do actual tours. Like we would do a Friday town, a Saturday town, a Sunday town, and then I would drive back, work Monday morning. It was about every 3 weeks or so I was going back to do at least a one-off, if not a 2 or 3 day shot with them. And the real value in that came from not just sort of getting outside of my comfort zone and working with a different clique of indie guys, but they would always have a name of some kind. And I was able to spend hours upon hours in cars or in hotels with a lot of legends of pro wrestling. A lot of people that I will absolutely go on record as saying in some way they had a profound influence on who and how I learned wrestling or who I was able to become in wrestling. The Iron Sheik, Jimmy Snuka, George Steele, Jake Roberts, to be in a car with some of those guys. And it's not like any of those names are chumps. Do they all have maybe some interesting personalities that you might have to contend with on the road? Absolutely. I heard the B. Brian Blair shtick years before it was a YouTube sensation. And more than a few choice words about Andre the Giant as well. Those were awkwardly hilarious at the time. But just pointers I would get from the Iron Sheik, in the grand scheme of things, he doesn't owe me anything. He's just giving me pointers at the shows or in the car. Here's different ways you can do this when you ring announce to time things out, to be able to just see how Jake works in the ring. He utilizes every tool in the toolbox, and it was just little stuff that I won't go into the super insidery, hey, this is how the match worked and how I was sort of involved in a Jake match, but to just see how simple he made it, but yet involved so much in telling the story as it needed to be told. Those were great experiences. In IWA Mid-South, it's not like I really ever did anything of note there. For the most part, I just did ring announcing, some commentary here and there, and then my incredibly forgettable stint as a manager in the last days. But what I did get out of IWA was I was working for them, every couple of weeks or whatever it was, in front of cameras, in front of Smart Mark videos, so I could pretty easily get my hands on a VHS or a DVD and see things like, why am I holding my arm like that when I'm ring announcing? I didn't know I had that nervous twitch in that hand or whatever dumb stuff that you see. Being able to get the video and the regularity of the work helped me learn a lot to move on to other things. Being able to work with Dragon Gate USA for some of those earlier shows was certainly a bigger production, and seeing how things were put together on a little grander scale. Same thing when I would end up being able to ring announce with Ring of Honor for the handful of times that I have. It's really to be able to be part of those things and do bigger and better things. You take something away from it, even if it's just a big smile and a great experience. But you're going to learn something somewhere along the way.
And moving forward, obviously you've got the school, you've got your AEW stuff and your Shimmer stuff, but sort of what do you see as your role in wrestling for the next few years? You're not in the ring, so you can sort of hang around and, be a big part of professional wrestling as a manager, a ring announcer, or what have you. So what do you see for yourself, moving forward in the next, short term and long term?
really, I think the short term is the long term at this point, because I have to face some very real facts. I am a 33-year-old bald guy. I'm not necessarily what WWE is probably looking for in an up-and-coming talent. Impact Wrestling, I don't really watch the product a whole lot, so I don't really know what they're all about. But I think I'm at a comfortable point where I realize trying to make a go with wrestling as a full-time thing is hard enough to do when you are a pro wrestler. You know, there's some of the old cliches of there's thousands of wrestlers in the world, but at a given time, only about 100 WWE contracts. Well, how many ring announcers do they have? Justin Roberts and Lillian Garcia, and occasionally Tony Schimmel. It's an even shallower talent pool, and I don't mean that as a dig to anybody, because those are all very, you know, very talented people. They're great at what they do, but the odds of landing that job are even, you know, they're even worse than trying to land that wrestling job when you just look at the, you know, just the numbers game of that.
Announcers have been there forever. The wrestlers go in and out, but, you know, Justin Roberts has been with WWE, I think, for almost 10 years now.
No, it's over 10 years. I think he signed his first contract in 2002.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a great gig once you get it, but tough to get in.
Yeah, and let's face it, for televised wrestling, the art of managing is almost lost. There's some glimmers of hope. Like, I'm very happy to see that, you know, Dutch has got the TV spot. Obviously, Heyman's a pretty prominent part of TV. But it's, you know, the focus of the last several years has been to make all of the talent in ring better characters, better performers, being able to talk. And a lot of times the role of that manager is to maybe talk for somebody that isn't so great at the talking part. So I definitely want to keep doing what I'm doing on the independents in terms of managing. You know, for now, that means being the devil incarnate at AAW, and I am absolutely fine with that. You know, it's a creative challenge just to come up with, okay, how can I not cheat and how can I carve my beard for whatever event is coming up? It's dumb little stuff, but I actually enjoy coming up with those silly little caveats to the performance. And hopefully the future, short term and long term, is really finding a stride and finding the mark with the school of everything else, whether that's as a weekly thing that happens or whether that's maybe more one-off camps and hitting the road a little bit with that. I honestly feel like I've got a pretty good grasp on how to portray yourself as a character, as a commodity, how to produce your things, how to, you know, not make things look Bush League when you may be working in the Bush Leagues of professional wrestling. Teaching people the art of how to put the spotlight on what you do have and hiding what you don't. I mean, if I had turned the lights on in my home for that stabbing the teddy bear promo, people would have saw my ceiling fan blowing, a wall of DVDs, and one of my ferrets probably crawling across the back of the couch. Like, doesn't exactly set the same mood as the lights out with a spotlight underneath. But hopefully being able to positively make an impact on the events that I perform on, the events that I am part of, the behind the scenes in whatever capacity that may be, and hopefully making those events and performers that I meet along the way who are on those events better for wrestling as a whole.
And I apologize to Greg. I almost forgot to ask this question, but he asked about how is this different from Taz's finishing school? I'm not sure if you remember that, but...
Yeah, to be quite honest, I like totally, my mind slipped the finishing school. For one, I'm not sure if it still exists. I'm not 100% on that. But, you know, Taz is a name that anyone can look at and say, ECW, WWE, TNA. I mean, you can watch, you know, Spike TV on Thursday nights and hear his voice on Impact Wrestling. You know, those are things that I don't have. But he also, I believe, focused on a lot of the in-ring and the physics and the wrestling end of things. And I'm not going to put out the guise of I am a wrestler. And, you know, some of the pitch I honestly feel for that was, you know, I'm here to tell you what WWE and Impact Wrestling are looking for. And yes, Taz absolutely knows that. And I'm not going to make any grand statement about I'm going to give you the tools you need to make it to Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, WWE, or whatever it may be. I can give somebody a crane. That doesn't mean they're going to be able to build a skyscraper. I can promise people that I can let them know the tools that are out there, let them know how I use it and how other people may use that. because it's I can give somebody the tool, but it's up to them to figure out how do they become better at using that tool.
And it could also serve as a great networking opportunity as well. I think that's always an underrated aspect of school in general. When you go to college or when you go to a wrestling school, you know, you can meet someone there who, you know, can potentially help you seek employment elsewhere, or, you know, be a good friend, a good advisor. So, you know, I think in addition to a school being a great place to sort of learn, it's also a great place to build a social network and to sort of build a base so that when you go on into the professional world, you have some people that you can contact.
Absolutely. And that's something where I've got a lot of contacts that I can help people with. I'm not going to just sit here and be like, oh, I'm going to call so-and-so. Like they're different brains that I can pick. And that networking thing is really important. The last 2 weeks before I pulled the trigger and said, hey, the School of Everything Else exists and this is the date, I was making calls to a whole lot of people in wrestling and picking their brains to put the bow on it, so to speak. Randy Ricci comes to mind. He and I were bouncing several ideas, just chatting over Facebook, talking to, you know, some people I bounced the ideas off of were like Steve Corino, Allison Danger, almost anybody in AEW that would listen, and finally got to that point of, all right, if they think this is a good idea and they think, yep, I feel like you would be a good person to do that, and that price point is more than fair, then hey, I'd say the bow's on it. Now it's just time to get some people signed up and set sail.
All right, so before we get out of here, one more time, why don't you go ahead and plug where people can get in contact with you for the School for Everything Else, give away your Twitter, and plug anything else that you want.
All right, for Twitter, I am available at Kevin Harvey AAW, and that is a Twitter for me, as well as everything School of Everything Else, because I already have too many hands and too many Twitters as it is between at AAW We Are Here, at AAW Pro, and everything else under the sun. I also manage Redman's Twitter account for him. It's the least I can do for him. He's a superstar. He doesn't have the time. Beyond that, Facebook.com/CWrestling, S-E-E Wrestling, is at this point, the official website of the School of Everything Else. For details, you can email issues for the school to CWrestling@gmail.com. And you can also call 630-708-6733.
All right, Kevin, I want to thank you very much for doing the show. It has always been a pleasure, and I believe the next show that you're going to be on, AEW Scars and Stripes, July 27th, correct?
July 27th at 115 Bourbon Street in Marionette Park. At this point, the only known match that I have, and oh, I'm looking forward to this, the Human Massacre Keith Walker, Nikki and I will go to the ring to take on Carlito Colon. And in the interest of getting uncomfortable, when you get the DVD or if they put it online of what will probably just be known as the Apple promo, it got weird.
Absolutely. There are a couple of other announced matches, tag team title match, Irish Airborne versus Marion Fontaine and Lewis Linden, as well as Eddie Kingston versus Rhino. So a lot of big stuff. AEWWrestling.com, of course, is the place to go for further details. Kevin, again, thank you. Good luck with the School of Everything Else. Good luck being creepy, and I will see you in about 3 weeks.
All right. Thanks, Jerome.
Have a good night.
You too.